The president told CBS News over the weekend that U.S. intelligence did not respond quickly enough to the growth of ISIS in the Middle East. In a 60 Minutes interview, the president said that despite coming late to the conflict, he has managed to mobilize the world against the self-proclaimed Islamic State.
We now have a coalition of more than 40 countries who are working with the Iraqi government and the Iraqi military to make sure that ISIL is rolled back and they can not only not destabilizing Iraq, but they also don't have the potential of destabilizing the rest of the region or striking us.
It's President Obama speaking to 60 Minutes correspondent Steve Croft. Let's think about that for a moment. Is this example of global mobilization going to work in the Middle East? There's been a lot of talk about how airstrikes can't change the military situation on the ground in Iraq and Syria. Is the president's much-touted global isolation an effective tool here? Do all the choking off the support for terrorism metaphors apply here? Or can ISIS cause as much trouble as, say, North Korea, which has remained a threat for more than a half century, despite its being one of the most isolated regimes in the world? Joining us now, Louise Shelley, author of Dirty Entanglements, Corruption, Crime, and Terrorism. She's director of the Terrorism Transnational Crime and Corruption Center at George Mason University. Louise Shelley, welcome.
Thank you.
So I'm wondering if the isolation that Barack Obama is talking about here in some ways fuels the underground black market dynamics that are really the lifeblood of an organization like ISIS.
ISIS is a diversified criminal business. It's involved in smuggling oil, robbing banks, the illicit cigarette trade, kidnapping. It is a large and probably the most criminal terrorist group that has ever existed. It is not very easy to cut off this diversified financing.
And I'm wondering if there's any track record for doing it with the kind of global mobilization here. In many ways, the U.S. has been reluctant to embrace a law enforcement means for combating ISIS. But you're suggesting that maybe dealing with ISIS as a criminal enterprise would be more effective than as some sort of ideological movement.
I think we need a multi-pronged perspective on ISIS. We may need a military perspective to get it to retreat. We need a certainly financial perspective and going after ISIS, not just for terrorist financing, but how ISIS functions as a business. And third, we need to go after the long-term roots of the crisis that have led to the growth of ISIS, which is the underlying corruption, the problems of youth without a future that will fuel ISIS now and fuel ISIS or other similar terrorist organizations in the future.
Do you see ISIS creating a criminal infrastructure all its own in its success right now, or is it basically grafted itself onto existing terrorist or criminal networks that have been relatively immune to eradication in the Middle East over many generations?
I think it's done both. It's used existing terrorist networks, but it's also used its expertise of the Baathists who are with the ISIS and their years of smuggling oil under the sanctions against Saddam Hussein to help move large amounts of oil illegally.
Is the U.S. constrained in that it can't criticize some of the nations that are a part of this coalition, even though, based on your investigation and the work that you and others are doing, they're very much involved in fueling the corruption? And I'm thinking of possibly Turkey, possibly Saudi Arabia. One can't be too public about criticizing either of these two members of the so-called coalition, yes?
It's certainly a problem. And Turkey has been part of these long-established smuggling routes. Smuggling routes date back in this region to the Ottoman Empire, and they continue on today. Saudi Arabia is not as much part of the smuggling, but some of the financing that may be supporting this organization. There are diverse ways that everybody is involved in this. And the involvement is not just of regional powers, but of many people in the developed world that receive money and are part of these international oil sales.
Finally, I'm thinking of Afghanistan now. The U.S. invaded Afghanistan, occupied parts of Afghanistan in a war, ostensibly, we were told, against the Taliban to cut off support for al-Qaeda. But the U.S. was never able to keep the Taliban from benefiting from the heroin trade in Afghanistan. Are there lessons from Afghanistan that need to be applied in thinking about ISIS going forward, or is it an example that we can't possibly succeed here?
One of our crucial problems in Afghanistan was that we put up with the crime, we put up with the drug trade, saying if we put up with this, we can get rid of the Taliban, instead of understanding how much the Taliban were involved in this. And supporting corrupt leadership in Afghanistan turned off many of the individuals who would have supported the intervention in Afghanistan more fully. So this corruption is a factor that influences many things, not just the facility to engage in trade, but the support for efforts to eradicate the illicit trade.
Is there a U.S. government agency that has a good track record in fighting these kinds of corruption networks?
The problem is that we have a stovepipe bureaucracy, cross-cutting issues, so that the ISIS is working in parts that are governed by the DEA, in parts that are followed by Department of Commerce, in parts that are covered by alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. And so there's not one organization that can fight or help counter a diversified terrorist organization that receives its finances from many areas.
And we suspect that ISIS probably has a pretty good organizational chart of that stovepipe bureaucracy you're describing. Louise Shelley, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Louise Shelley is author of Dirty Entanglements, Corruption, Crime, and Terrorism. She's director of the Terrorism Transnational Crime and Corruption Center at George Mason University.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing.
Or politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.